flavour and provenance is of utmost importance. It's definitely an education, and at the end of the day, people see that the flavour and the texture of the meat is what wins through.
This is The Producers. I'm Danny Vallant. Georgie Rogers raises white Suffolk sheep suited to Australian conditions on her 80-acre farm in South Australia. She has a background in hospitality, but Georgie is a country girl, and eventually the region called her back. As a solo newbie farmer, the four-year journey has been challenging but rewarding, despite and even because she occasionally has her arm up to the elbow inside a pregnant ewe.
So I'm Georgie Rogers, and I have a farm, sheep farm, Rogers Farm Barossa, up here in Springton in Eden Valley. I raise white Suffolk sheep, which are a breed of sheep that have been bred in Australia for Australian conditions, and they are both a meat sheep and a wool sheep. So they're a little bit of a longer growing sheep, which suits my purposes perfectly, to obtain a meat that is more flavoursome. They're a smaller breed of sheep too, which also suits me because I'm quite a small person. Makes them a little bit easier for me to manage. When I first started out, I was really interested in Border Leicesters, another breed of sheep, and my mum said to me, don't get those, you'll never be able to cope with them because they're too big. And she was right. So white Suffolks are really lovely animals. They, as I said, produce an amazing quality of meat, but I can also sell the wool as well. Well, it is technically part of the Barossa, but it's the Eastern Barossa. So Eden Valley is probably the closest main town to me, about 10 minutes away. And Eden Valley is known for a great Riesling wine region. And at Springton itself is, a little bit further east, almost on the ranges, dividing the Murray River from the Adelaide Hills, and it's quite a dry, rocky area. And the main scenic point of Springton is its beautiful big red gum trees. So the landscape around here is a little bit more open than the Adelaide Hills, but spotted with these gigantic, beautiful red gums. Yeah, it's quite a low rainfall area. I myself am actually in a rain shadow, which I didn't know when I first bought the property, but I've recently discovered every winter. So sometimes I'm lucky enough to get the rain, but quite often it can sort of wave as it goes past me overhead. Winter time can be quite wet and get a lot of rain all at once, and the ground sort of gets quite wet and damp, and then it dries up very quickly in about a couple of months, and then there's a period of about 7 to 8 months of dry.
The rocky nature of the farm means it's best suited for sheep, with the exact stocking density dependent on rainfall. Georgie has taken the time to understand the needs and pressures on her patch and has learnt to be strategic about grazing to ensure ongoing health of both soil and stock.
My farm is 80 acres, and I'd say probably about 70% of that is arable land, not for cropping but for grazing. And what I mean by that is that because Springton is so rocky, there's quite a bit of rocky outcrop, which means that nothing much grows in amongst those parts. So no good for cattle grazing really on my place, but sheep are okay. And Yeah, so being 70% of that means that I can have probably at the most 70 to 100 sheep in a good year, and my aim is to have sheep on the property all year round because I want to increase my flock. So I need to be quite careful each year to maintain stock numbers at a reasonable level so that, number one, I don't run out of water, number two, that I don't overgraze the land. What I've noticed in the 4 years since I've been here and the 2 years since I've had my own flock is that when I first came across this land, it was quite overgrazed. It was used as an adjustment property. No one was living here, but local farmers were able to adjust their sheep here, and was probably holding too many animals for what the land could sustain. So it resulted in quite a lot of patchy grass and visible dirt underneath. So in the summertime, so the driest parts of the year up here between January and April, because there's not much rain. It rains a little bit in January and then really nothing much until the winter rains. So it gets very dry, and it's also quite windy up here because it's very open land. And so what I'd noticed was the wind would pick up huge clouds of dust off the ground, and I really started to become aware that it was really important to maintain ground cover. So for me, that means maintaining a stocking level that's appropriate to what the land can sustain, and that does tend to vary from year to year depending on the rainfall. So what I've developed over the last couple of years is a system where I can rotate my sheep around and be very careful about what the grass is looking like, if it's and starting to get patchy at all. Very, very careful about monitoring the rainfall and how much water I have, because I don't have a bore, I just have a dam, so I rely on that filling every winter. Last winter, incidentally, was the first year the dam was full and overflowing in 4 years. So hopefully we're on the up and up in that cycle. Looking forward to an even better season this year.
Georgie was working as a chef when she started to think about a sustainable business and life for the next decades of her life. Providing food for friends, family and her community in the region she was born felt like a move worth investigating.
About 4 years ago, I was really wanting a change, and I had started to think a lot about buying a small amount of land, and I really liked the idea of being able to produce my own food, and was thinking a lot about the future and what it would be like to provide food for friends and family, and the importance of that coming into the next 20, 30, 50 years. So I had been working as a chef, and before that, well, honestly, since my 20s, I've always been in the food industry in some form or another, mainly selling food and providors, cheese, small goods, spent a bit of time overseas, and came to chefing quite late in life, so to speak. And so from there, food has always been in my blood, and I was just feeling, I think, the need to return to the land. I'd grown up from being born to the age of 12 on a little hobby farm in Birdwood, which is about 15 minutes, probably closer to Adelaide than where I am now. So similar kind of land, but just a hobby farm. So we had a couple of horses and a few cows, and that was about it really. But it really instilled those values in me as a child of what it meant to look after animals, and to have that knowledge of the stillness of farm life and the joy that it can bring. I just felt a huge draw to come back out here. So I bought a small parcel of land.
And wow.
Yeah. So it's been quite the journey. Ending up where I am now is not, I guess, how it started, but it's all sort of come into up to this point. I was working as a chef in town for a couple of years, and when I bought the land, it had nothing on it at all except for a shed and a little rainwater tank that was connected to a stock trough. Had a couple of rickety old timber sheep yards and a little hay shed. And I thought, oh, that's a good start. At least there's some water. And then in the year following that, the house was built, and I commuted. I came up every weekend just to sort of have a little look-see about how the house was going, and I'd bring up my sleeping bag and sleep in the timber structure of the house as it was coming along. The builders were quite friendly and let me do things like that. So once the house was built, it was I came up here straight away, and I was commuting to Adelaide 5 times a week, which was about a 3-hour round trip, and then COVID hit, and I left my job there and really started to focus on what it would look like to start something substantial up at the farm and grow something for the future. Yeah, and it all happened from there.
Buying a farm is one thing. Turning it into a home and business is another. Georgie built her flock slowly, leaning into the help of neighbours and supportive online communities. Lambing has been an enormous part of the process, often joyful, sometimes distressing, and occasionally very dramatic.
When I first bought the farm, I actually wanted to breed pigs because I'd had such a long history in Spanish small goods, and I had a Spanish delicatessen where I was very much involved in those types of foods, and I had a dream of starting a farm and a pig farm. But 2 years into this farm, I started to realise that this wasn't quite the right type of land to sustain pigs, and I would need an awful lot more infrastructure and money to start a pig farm. So I thought, well, I'll start with something seemingly easier and buy a few sheep instead. Initially, it started off relatively easy. I bought my first flock of 20 lambs. They were 6 months old ewe lambs, and they're all white Suffolk ewes. And then about 6 months later, I bought my first ram, Gordon. And then 6 months after that, 5 months after that, I had my first flock of lambs. So I had 25 lambs, and ended up with 20 out of that. And so the first real struggle for me was the lambing season. And that was probably the first point. So this is September, October last year. This is the first point where I started to think, oh, gosh, what have I got myself into? Reason being, I think, well, every day getting up and checking on the lambs was in on the one hand, really exciting and really joyful to just be out there in the green grass and the cold and mist and seeing these tiny little lambs, and it was so, so exciting. But the other side of that was occasionally finding one that didn't make it, or one that was having trouble, a ewe that was having trouble giving birth. And it really started to dawn on me the huge feeling of responsibility for other life. And it, yeah, it just hit home, and I had a lot of tears and a lot of fear, and just that feeling of like, gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I can do this. And I kept on through. I have the most amazing neighbours who have helped me, and the Instagram community has been incredible, like all over the world, with tips on how to help young mothers and all sorts of lambing difficulties. I don't know what I'd do without YouTube. Demonstrations of how to pull out a lamb, for instance. I never thought, I guess I never really realised the reality of when I started this, that I might have my arm up to my elbow inside a sheep. And I don't have any veterinary skills whatsoever. And it's crazy to think that just through YouTube I've learned how to pull out a lamb. I think the first real experience that I had was one of my favourite ewes, actually, who's has been with me from the start, Enid. She had the first lamb that was I can't remember the name for it now, but the lamb had its head sticking out of her, and the legs were tucked up underneath the head, whereas normally the front legs would come out first and then the head between those and the rest of the body would follow, and that's a natural birthing position if nothing goes wrong. So Enid had was walking around with, I could see her head poking out, and I thought, oh, that's not good. And what had happened was the two little feet were tucked up underneath her head and blocking the windpipe of the lamb. And so I managed to get her into a yard, which fortunately was quite close by, and grab the little hooves and pull them out. And at this point, I didn't even know how much pressure I could apply. I was so scared of doing damage to the mum or the lamb. And but in the end, I think I just, in that moment, you just forget all the fear and just go, well, I just have to. I have to do this. And so I pulled, and as I said before, I'm quite a small person, and so I pulled, and I pulled even harder, and I was like, oh, gosh, I can't do much. And then I just pulled even harder, and so eventually the feet came forward, and then I thought, oh, halfway there. But I thought at this point that the lamb was dead, you know, it had its tongue out and not breathing and eyes closed. And so I thought I was pulling a dead lamb, and so I thought, for the mum's sake, get it out as quickly as possible. And so I just pulled really hard. Out he popped onto the ground, and almost instantly the lamb started wheezing and coughing and moving, and the mum was just exhausted and collapsed on the ground. But I popped the lamb in front of her, and she started licking him, and within about half an hour he was standing up. So it was quite incredible and really overwhelming, but just so grateful that he made it through.
Georgie grows sheep, but she sells hogget rather than lamb. What are the special qualities of these older animals?
So I grow my sheep to 15 to 18 months of age. So I sell my sheep as hogget to the market instead of selling as lamb. So I guess the biggest marketable term at the moment is lamb, and that's what people know and understand. So for me, I sell hogget, which is a little bit older. Lamb is up to about 10 to 12 months of age. So hogget is approximately 12 to 24 months old. And that's what I've chosen to sell. For me, it's important to have a product that is about flavour and quality. So hogget is the fat is a sweeter kind of fat. Because my animals are all 100% grass-fed, and I don't feed out any grain, it means that the flavour profile of the animal is quite different to some of the lamb that you might buy commercially. And what I've noticed is, in particular, the fat is quite sweet and has a less of a cloying nature than lamb fat usually does. And I've noticed that that is can be the difference between 100% grass-fed and animals that have finished their last 3 months on grain. And, yeah, it's really quite different. My hoggets, when they're processed, well, after processing, are about 28 to 30 kilos, and lambs would probably be around the 25 kilo mark tops. So it's a much slower process, so it's a real slow food, if you like. Hogget definitely has an interesting ring to it, and some people have even thought that I'm selling pork. So, yeah, it's definitely an education. I found that a lot of people are genuinely interested in how the animal is raised and wanting to buy from small farmers and are interested that I'm not doing a feedlot system or bringing in grain that's surplus to what my land can provide. So it's definitely, number one, it's about flavour. So my main customers are chefs, restaurant chefs, and for them, flavour and provenance is of utmost importance. And my other customers have been farmers market customers, and also I've delivered direct to the door with boxes of meat. And it's definitely an education. And at the end of the day, people see that the flavour and the texture of the meat is what wins through.
Farm dogs are often more than just workers. Georgie tells us about the special bond with her sheepdog, Billy.
I've got an amazing dog, Billy, a Maremma. So Billy I took on as an older rescue farm dog about a year ago. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but Maremmas are a big Italian sheepdog, really. And so they're usually dogs that are out guarding the flocks, so they're not a house pet. They don't come inside, but they have this amazing natural instinct to protect. And he's just wonderful. I when I bought Billy, I had just recently lost my own dog, and I wasn't sure what to do. And the opportunity to adopt Billy came up. And it just worked for me because he's 8 years old. Not many people really wanted him because he was so old, and the possibility of him only being around for another couple of years was not something some people wanted to take on, and people prefer to buy puppies, especially on farms, because they want to train an animal for their own purposes. So Billy for me is more of a companion dog, really, out on the farm. He does sleep outside 100% of the time, but he sleeps close to the house. He wasn't trained as a livestock guardian, and so he grew up in a semi-rural environment, but in a small yard, and so it didn't really suit him at all. And so for him being out here on the land, I've just really seen him thrive. Like he's got so much fitter. he was quite overweight and very rickety on his legs when I bought him, and now he's out there running and really seeming to enjoy life out here, and I'm just very grateful to have him.
Georgie has worked with food all her life. Producing it at Rogers Farm is a particular pleasure, especially when connecting with like-minded chefs.
Well, it's quite a great feeling, actually. But having been a cook for so long, it's a really nice feeling to be able to produce food that I know is of such high quality, and to be able to share that with others, like other chefs and customers. I have such great conversations with chefs, and it's such a really rewarding experience talking to people that really know how to cook well and know their products intimately, and so they understand the difference of what I'm producing, and they understand the process of what I'm trying to do. So from a production and a pricing perspective, they really get it. More and more chefs are jumping on board because they really care about sustainability and are happy to go through the process that entails to get a good product. The main thing for me is being on the land. It's quite amazing to be able to wake up every day and have my morning coffee and hear the birds, hear the magpies and the parrots, and then go out for a walk to check on the sheep. It's a very grounding experience, and I feel so connected and feel so fortunate to be able to be part of our food production system. It's such a great place to be. It's pretty amazing to have something on the plate that you've grown yourself. My favourite cut, I would have to say, is it's hard. I eat it all, so and there's so many different things to do. Look, I still love a shoulder. I love it. I love slow cooking in winter. Coming into this time of year is my favourite time of year. Being able to have the fire on every day and do slow cooked shoulders in the Dutch oven is definitely my favourite way to cook lamb. When friends come over, it's usually a charcoal barbecue. So we have all the good things like the cutlets, but also debone a whole leg of lamb and marinate that in just garlic and wine and a lot of herbs and pop that on the barbecue. It is pretty cool to be able to share food that I've grown here on the property with my friends.
Georgie Rogers is part of a strong community of small-scale farmers in the broader Barossa region in South Australia. She's looking after the land, teaching people what hogget means, and finding plenty of satisfaction in offering flavourful protein to passionate home cooks and chefs. This is The Producers, a Deep in the Weeds production. I'm Danny Vallant. Stay tuned as we talk to some of Australia's best farmers, makers and growers. Follow us on Instagram at Producers Podcast or contact us via deepintheweeds.com.au.